Okay, like you were saying, that reminded you of another little story?
Yeah. My granddaddy and my grandmother were cooking breakfast. And my granddaddy owned a big bird dog named Jack. And to hear them tell you, you know, Jack had senses like a human. And he got to bargain up there at his corn crib. He thought when, you know, he thought back, you know, dogs bark out in the country like he don't think nothing about it a whole lot. But he kept on and he finally went up there. And opened it up and there was Racy Marbury, a black man, in there helping himself to the corn. You know.
Oh, yeah.
But the dog got to bark around, he was afraid to come out.
It
was kind of comical. And my granddaddy would have given him corn if he'd asked him to.
So what did he do?
He didn't even give him a talking to him. But Racy Marbury, after then, got to be a barber. Cut hair, you know. And he cut my hair when I was a kid up at my granddaddy. And he'd take me. Racy had a shop there in Kelsmill and up for me.
Was this, he cut your hair after he
yeah.
was caught eating
oh,
corn?
Oh, yeah. He'd get a big laugh out of it every time.
Oh, yeah.
He'd tell me about it.
I bet. Give him a hard time every time he So your grandfather was very, I guess, tolerant?
Yeah, I mean, he was tolerant.
I mean, I imagine...
He wasn't racist.
Right, okay. Because I was about to say, I imagine back in this time there was still a lot of racism.
Yeah, it was.
Around the
well, now, when I was a boy, and see, I was in a grocery store over there, and a black man came in, and he pulled off his hat, you know,
yeah.
and said, yes, sir, no, sir. I mean, they were really... Of course, back then, I thought that's the way it was supposed to be.
Right. That's the way you were brought up thinking.
Yeah.
They were subservient.
I thought that was natural.
Yeah. But your grandfather was very, I mean, like, I imagine, you know, if it had been some racist guy, he could have, you know, really laid into the...
Right,
to,
yeah. In my day, he shot him, you know that.
Yeah. But he just gave him a good talking to, then
good
he went on to
yeah.
cut your hair.
Right. Well, late on, you know,
right.
later years, he cut my hair. Racy Marlboro? Yeah, Marlboro.
Is that like the pack of cigarettes?
No, Marlboro. You may or be well. I'm probably pronouncing it.
Marlboro?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And another thing, this was while we were living with my granddad, three or four years, he died. My uncles, two of them had got married, you know. Aunt had gotten married. I believe all of them had gotten married. And all was left there, and the farm on the farm was us, you know.
So they married and moved out of
right,
the
farm. Right, moved out, right.
Okay.
Over a period of time.
Right.
And it was not far from where we lived on the farm. There was a house, a shack. And it was an old Uncle George McAdory, we called him. He was a colored man, black man. And my dad hired him to help us. Anything he wanted me to do, you know, he helped us. And worked. I don't know what did he did, but my dad didn't have much.
Did he feed him?
Yeah, we
fed him.
Uncle George McAdory. But he was, when he died, he was like one of his family.
So did he stay there till he died?
Yeah, he stayed there till he died. Didn't have any folks. Had never married. Didn't have any children.
And y'all called him Uncle?
We called him Uncle George, my sister, and my brother. He had a little white hair.
Right above his ears.
And if he talked to you, even us kids, he'd take that hat off. Twisted in his hand. I never forget this.
Really?
But he was, when he got real old, well, he was old when the dad hired him, but when he got down to people, he was real old.
Really?
So he was he was afraid my dad was going to kick him out or something, he didn't have nowhere to go.
Why was he afraid that your dad would kick him out?
Well, I said if he did kick him out, you know, if he done something, those boys or so, I'll give him the example. Say we was out plowing. We'd get to cutting up or something, or throw a rock at our mule, or hit him with a line or something. Uncle George would get on to tell us, don't do that. He said, Mr. Ray, that's what he said. Mr. Ray, I think I done it. He said, you're making me move.
Oh.
Things like that.
Yeah, he was just real.
Yeah, just real quick.
On his toes.
Yeah.
So this was, I mean, I imagine, how long did y'all live with him? How long did he stay there?
Oh.
Years and years?
Let's see. Yeah, several years, of course. Or 3 or 4 years, 5 years. I think I was in the Navy when he went to me that he was dead. Mm.
So this was someone y'all really grew close to?
Well, yeah. He was just a good old black man.
Yeah. A lot of help.
Yeah, a lot of help. Russian baby. I don't know how old Uncle George was. I don't have any idea. But before I joined the Navy, and I was still helping Daddy on the farm, so climbing, and he's climbing out there with us.
Well, I'm sure he really appreciated, you know, y'all, you know, welcoming in so warm-heartedly and feeding him and help, you know, give him a place to stay.
Yeah,
he didn't have any family, or he never married.
Yeah. Now this is kind of funny. Well, we got a big thing. But Uncle George was a Negro lady that lived real young. Uncle George was, I think, close to 70. He was tried to court him. Because they wouldn't have nothing to do. They laughed at him, really, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't
hurt to try.
And he got my dad to order him some shirt from Chicago, but some nice dresses. He'd get all this stuff there. And my brother Edson used to hit him.
So he was trying to hit on those younger women.
Yeah, real young.
So y'all got a kick out of that.
Yeah, we got a
kick out of that. I bet. So what made you decide? You enlisted yourself in the Navy.
Right.
Why?
Well, at my age, and my girlfriend lived in Dayton. I decided to join me. And we had a date with two more boys.
Yeah.
And we'd been to Dayton, come back to Atlantic City, and there was Nick's Cafe there in Atlantic City where all the boys come in and reported in, you know, after the date. It was Saturday night. But anyway, we heard the news that somebody come in and told the Japs had bombed Pearl Harbor.
Oh,
and
wow.
I didn't know where Pearl Harbor was. Really. I had to look it up. But I knew at my age I was gone. Because that's when President Roosevelt declared war in Japan and Germany. So I decided that to have a place to sleep every night unless I was getting water.
So you realized that you were going no matter what,
right?
Because of the draft,
no way I could stay out of it.
And that would probably have been in the Army, correct?
Right.
And so you decided to go ahead and take one step ahead of them and join the Navy.
Right.
Okay. So you joined the Navy.
Yeah, we joined the Navy, and that was right after the war started. Sent us to Birmingham, we got sworn in, and said, well, they told us, said, we got no place to put you. So you're in the Navy, but says, go home, so we'll let you in. And I stayed home about a month before they called me and sent me. Took my boot camp, me and Curtis Stewart, a friend of mine, joined together. And we stayed together through boot camp. When we got through boot camp, they separated. He went aboard a tanker, shifting down to Miami, Florida, and I got a card from him down there. And he was going aboard this tanker.
Was this while you were Were you still waiting at this time, or had you
No, we done through boot camp. Okay.
And you were probably at the end of boot somewhere.
Yeah, at the end of boot camp, he went to Florida and got aboard a tanker.
Okay.
And I went to machinist school there in North. I bet about 3 or 4 months.
I'm sorry, what did you say? In machinist school in where?
In Norfolk, Virginia.
Norfolk, Virginia, right. Okay.
And I completed that, and they sent me to New York, and we lived on a receiving ship, and the ship just tied up the dock, and there wasn't no engine in it. It was just a...
Take cargo?
Right, take cargo.
Okay.
And I went to school there for 3 or 4 months. We were really learning about steam engines, superheated steam. And after there, I went over to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and I got on. They assigned me to the USS Yankees. And our first trip on the Jenkins was we went up the Hudson River to the ammunition dump there, away from the city, And then we took on ammunition, 5-inch shells and powder, 20mm, 40mm.
What type of ship was the Jenkins, did you say? Was that?
Destroyer.
Okay. Could you explain how the ship system works in the destroyers?
Okay.
Like
as far as fleet was concerned, the first line fleet fighting ship, the smallest one was a destroyer. And the next size was a cruiser. Well, they had a light cruiser and a heavy cruiser. And then the next size was a battleship. And then the next was an aircraft carrier.
And that was what y'all were protecting.
Right, that was okay. What.
And y'all were the first in line, right. Kind of like the Marines are today.
Right. In other words, when we was out going from one place to the other or going into battle, the carriers were in the center, and the battle wagons around them, they're all going the same way.
Right.
And then the heavy cruiser, and then the light cruiser, and then the destroyers. We were searching for submarines. Everybody had the radar on.
So they had to go through y'all to get to anybody else.
Right. We were very much part of the first line fleet. They kept us busy, all of them. And the first really trip out on the open ocean, we went from New York down to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. That's where we took our shape anchor. That's where we learned how to our duties, when we from then on through the Navy. And this ship was a brand new ship, and to show you how thoroughly they put us through the space and put the ship through the space, we'd be going full speed ahead just as fast as we could go, and then they'd give us full speed astern. And you'd cut off the valve going forward and almost the other valve, and the ship would just stand there in shape. And that big a ship, so it started back. But if that held, you pretty well know it was. It was really built good.
Yeah. So, you said we were talking earlier, and you told me that y'all stayed in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Y'all spent all the time in the Pacific.
Yeah. When we got back from a shakedown cruise, they was fixing land troops on Normandy, Casablanca, North Africa. And it was a big convoy, the most ships I've ever saw in my life left. The whole east coast of the United States. And they all got together and went over and landed troops and that. And less than 3 days after they landed troops, we got orders to go back to North.
Yeah, D-Day.
Yeah. No, this wasn't D-Day. This was early in the war. They landed troops in Africa, and that's just a job. The destroyer squadron come back to New York, I believe. And that's when they installed radar on us. That's the first time we were one of the first ships that ever got radar on us.